with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The First Time Caller Line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This is a really interesting reaction to Eric Brendy tonight. Is really interesting. A lot of extremely positive comments are coming in, you know, fast blasted and otherwise. And people are assessing Eric as absolutely genuine and, you know, a true believer in what he's saying and what he did and all the rest of it. And a lot of people are agreeing with it, too. Here's something from the back of the book, one of the reviews. This calm and unjudgmental account of living a little more lightly on the earth will do readers more good than 1,000 of the self-help books crowding the bestseller lists. It'll make you think about your own life more than you've thought about it for years. And for that service, we can be deeply grateful to the talented Eric Brendy. And it goes on and on. And that's kind of the kind of fast blast I'm getting right now, for the most part. Now, I do have one here I want to read in a moment by you'll never guess who. Remember I told you about my friend Paul, who owns the internet a distributor here in town, one of the best, and Paul fast blasted me, and he makes a very good point that Eric might want to try and answer. I mean, the Minimite lifestyle is one thing, but Paul fast blasts, hey, try being a Minimite here in our Nevada desert heat without air conditioning, you could die. Now, there's an interesting conflict potentially, Eric. I mean, if you applied that lifestyle out here in the middle of the desert where I live, oh, about 20 miles from Death Valley, in the middle of the summer, you'd probably be deader than a doornail. And so the only alternative would be air conditioning or some facsimile thereof, or you're dead.
Yeah, but you could say something very similar about what if the Minimites had to live in Northern Alaska.
Yeah, I do say that. What if they did?
Well, but I don't think they have to. I mean, if global population pressures get to the point where people will be forced to live in otherwise inhospitable areas, then of course, by all means, bring in the technology that will make that possible, if we have to colonize other planets, for that matter.
But would your position be that the fact of the matter is, people don't have to live in Alaska. People don't have to live in the desert. People don't have to live in these places. They can darn well live someplace where a Minimite lifestyle works. Is that it?
Well, I mean, I think that's the short, practical answer. But, I mean, if I really wanted to address what he's getting at is, you know, if we have to live in a place that is very inhospitable to the human anatomy, and we have no other option, then of course bring in the technology that'll make it habitable if we ever have to colonize other planets. If we run out of room here, I'm sure we're going to have to make technological adaptations. So
yes, indeed. We would have to, wouldn't we? But
in
the meantime, though, the Minimite position would be, don't live in those places.
Sure. But, you know, let me address, too, the issue of air conditioning, if I might.
You might.
I do think that, not that there aren't times when air conditioning may be a very good idea, but yeah. I do think that, in general, its use is greatly overrated, because what it does is it overrides the body's own natural air conditioning system. I mean, all other air conditioning systems just borrow this idea from the body that by evaporating a liquid from a surface, it draws heat from that surface and therefore cools it off. And that's what the liquid on our bodies uses, sweat. And the liquid that the air conditioning uses is Freon. But if you have air conditioning, your body never makes the adjustment. It never acclimates to the ambient temperature.
That is true.
And so, and that is a physiological process. It takes about 2 weeks. The body has to sweat differently, has to reroute the blood flow differently. It takes about 2 weeks for that to take place. And if you don't allow, if you are always in an air-conditioned environment, you never allow the body to do that. I think by here in St. Louis, we haven't turned on the air conditioning at all this year or last year.
Very laudable.
And what that frees us up to go outside and not feel the horrible blast of heat.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually gain a season, and we don't really lose that much in the way of comfort. Now, there are some days when it is really brutally hot. And for those days, we just go to the swimming pool. We just say, hey, uncle, we'll go to the swimming pool.
All right. All right, look, I've got a lot of people who would like to ask you questions.
Sure.
And remind me before the hour's up, and we'll again give the address where you can get an actual autographed copy of this, of your book. And but in the meantime, a lot of people do want to ask questions. First time caller line, you're on the air with Eric Brendy. Hi.
Yes, my name is Alan Rhodes.
Just give me your first name only.
Alan.
All right, and Alan, turn your radio off, please. That's
okay.
A prerequisite to getting on the air. There's a delay system. It will confuse you. Okay, Alan, so what's up?
Oh, I'm from Georgia. I just want to make a few comments about your guest.
Sure.
I didn't get the first part of the show, and I apologize for that, but I think a distinction should be made between the Amish and the Mennonites, USA. Now, the word is Mennonite, not Mennonite.
Now, this is a name he assigned to a specific sect so that he wouldn't have to give their real name, sir.
Well, what group was, I mean, can he talk about what group he's identifying with?
No, because he wants to give them, you know, they would like to keep their anonymity, so he agreed to do that. I understand that. I hope you do, too.
Well, I very disturbed in this mixing up of that name with the Mennonites, which is the mainline Mennonite Church USA.
Mark, do you want to address that, Eric?
Which is totally different.
Yeah, I've got that.
Totally different.
I understand. Do you want to address that, Eric?
Well, okay. The group that I was with was a part of a larger Anabaptist movement, which has three main branches we know today as the Amish, the Mennonites, and the Hutterites.
That's correct.
There is a spectrum among the Mennonites. You have Old Order Mennonites that still drive horse and buggies, and then you have a more mainstream Mennonites.
That's correct.
That are very similar to everybody else. Sometimes they wear head coverings.
That's correct.
But even in the more liberal groups, sometimes they don't.
So you were with the Old Orders?
I was with a group that was with the Old Order. Whether it was Mennonite, Amish, or Hutterite, I don't want to say, because I don't want to give too many clues to their identity. That's why I nickname Mennonites, because the one characteristic they really have is that they minimize the use of technology.
So, all right, so we're past that caller. Anything else?
That's all I want to say. And then I coined another word, minimation, for minimizing the amount of automation one uses in one's life. And that was the principle of technological selection.
No, I've got it. Okay, clear on that. Wild card line, you're on the air with Eric Brendy. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to say one thing, that I'm a longtime listener to Art Bell. I've been listening for a long time to you. My wife and I, we've joined a Vichy Amish Mennonite community here in California. And one thing that was very hard for me to let go was my wind-up radio to listen up to the evening news with Art Bell.
Well, apparently you have not yet let go of it, because
it's that one thing. Yes.
You are, well, I don't know about that one thing. I mean, you're calling me now. That's,
well, we allow phones.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Business.
Sorry.
Yes.
All right. So
the other thing
business.
That I let go with TV and a lot of other things, though, like TV entertainment, computer net, things that go along with technology that your guest has been speaking about.
Well, how are you faring without those things?
They're, I remember you were commenting about your friend who went to the Bahamas, you know, and he had that. I had the same thing where I missed it a great deal.
Actually, Bermuda.
Oh, they're, Bermuda,
well,
I'm sorry.
They're really tight. I mean, no radios, no computers.
Yeah.
Pretty minimalistic.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how are you faring without these things, sir? Are you happy? And?
Oh, yes, yes. That's one thing that really made it worthwhile was the community. I mean, really, when you join the community, you're part of the body. It's just like your body. If you stub your toe on a door, you don't hit scold the toe for hitting the door. You take care of your toe.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true with the members of the community. If one gets hurt, they all help. And so even building a house or getting, you know, making sure you get food and everything's. All your necessities basically are
communal. It's like it's very communal.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you're happy. For my part, Eric, frankly, I don't like people that much. In other words, this requires that's a very harsh statement to make, I understand, but this requires a very harsh interdependence, and it is a very community oriented. I don't want to say communistic because that wouldn't be fair at all, but certainly communal, I don't know, kind of living, right? Where all for one and one for all, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the reasons why it is so inviting, the community is so inviting, is that, as I put in the book, that manual labor craves collaboration. When you're working together, or when you're working, there is something about working physically that draws out of people their personalities. And
sure.
And I think it's partly because since you're there to work and not necessarily in order to get to know people, but the purpose is the work, it actually paradoxically frees up your social self to get out of its shell.
Oh, sure.
You're not trying to get to know people, and so you do.
And so you do, right. Makes absolute sense. In a Mennonite community, I mean, it's got to be essentially like everywhere else in some ways. There are going to be some people whose guts you just absolutely hate. I'm sure the Mennonites have that kind of stuff going on, don't they? That's just human.
Yes, it is, and it does happen. And that can be a real thorn. But there was a rule, or a rule of thumb, that one of the women in the community told me that helps their community succeed, which is that whenever you get a comment or a reaction that strikes you the wrong way and you think you feel offended, never assume that it was the way the person intended.
Hmm.
Always go back and make sure you understood what they said. And 99 times out of 10, you misconstrued what they were saying.
And then pull out the taser gun. All right, let's keep going. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Eric Brendy. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Sherry in Fort Worth.
Hey, Sherry.
I grew up in a middle-class, old-school, bohemian type family. I was raised by my grandparents, and everything was kind of slow-paced. And I was just wondering how the children fare in that type of setting, in the Mennonite setting, as far as when they get older. Because, you know, when I got older, I went a little crazy.
Ah, yes, the old Catholic girl theory, basically.
Yes.
Right?
Big time.
The wild ones.
Oh, yes.
Well, Eric, that's a pretty good question in a way. As the Mennonite children grow, do they reach a stage in, oh, I don't know, maybe their teen years or just beyond, where suddenly they rebel and go out and taste the world?
Well, unlike the Amish in Lancaster County that have a wild rumspringa and run around all over the place and drink a lot of beer and go crazy, these people did not. These adolescents And one reason was that the people in this community had congregated in this remote part of the country where we were precisely to get away from that wildness that was in a lot of other of these settlements.
Hmm.
And I will have to say that the results were pretty successful. I found that the youth there were extremely mature and self-possessed at a young age. There was an 11-year-old boy, 11 years old, mind you, living next door to us, one of the Miller children, and he would come down and monitor our activities and make sure we were picking our beans at the right stage. And he had this air of authority, of a seasoned experience about him, that I've never seen, even in kids a lot older than he is.
So he was completely immersed happily within the Mennonite lifestyle.
He almost glowed. He had kind of a halo.
Oh,
he had this healthy glow to him.
Was that typical of Mennonite youth, or was that abnormal?
Well, I don't think it was atypical. I think he might have been more so than most. And he was the youngest in the family, so maybe he was doted upon a little bit more.
Okay, but again, most Mennonite children don't go through that kind of rebellion and go out and become part of the world and say, there's more of a world out there.
I never heard of it there. They didn't have...
Wow.
They had very well-organized hoeings and other activities, singings for the youth. There's a chapter in my book called A Hoeing, and it describes what the hoeing is like, and it's very charming.
All right, so, ma'am, it sounds like that's the answer to your question.
Can I ask another quick one?
Sure.
What about the outside people that emerge into that type of setting? Don't you feel that's kind of a regression? And I understand that every once in a while we need to step back and, you know, take a look at the big picture before we can move forward, you know, if we got a certain problem that we need to work through. But to me it almost seems like you're regressing. Is there a specific reason, or was there something that possibly you felt like you missed out on as a child that might have brought you to this curiosity?
Well, I missed out on a lot of things as a child because I was in such a televisionized environment growing up, and my father was so preoccupied with his technology and his profession that, yes, I did crave to have real human contact and do something real with my body and not feel cut off. And for that very reason, for me, it was not a regression at all. It was a way to progress and recover things that that technology had deprived me of.
But Eric, I'm sure any psychologist would just have a field day with you with regard to your father. Wouldn't he? In other words, you probably have an incredible amount of suppressed anger at technology for what it took away from you in terms of your relationship with your father. And that could manifest itself. Well, in your case, I guess, it's cathartic. You wrote a book for the Unabomber. The Unabomber might have experienced something like you did, Eric, only it manifested itself in a different way. Is that fair?
Well, even if it's true that there's a really powerful psychological motive for what I wrote, I don't think that takes away from the actual substance of what I wrote.
Oh, not at all.
Provided me an incentive that the average person wouldn't have had.
Absolutely, not at all. That isn't what I was trying to say. Just
right.
That you unleashed your, I guess, anger over what happened with you and your dad by writing about it, by going and living this lifestyle. Anyway, there certainly are parallels. Darkness, quiet, silence.
I've come to talk with you again.
Certainly the typical Mennonite night.
Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than I've ever known. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Does it get any better than this song? It's the Mennonites for sure, the Mennonites. We'll get it straight. Anyway, what an incredible... Well, what an incredible program, really. Eric Brendy is my guest. He's written a book. You can get a copy of it, and I'm just about to tell you how to do that again. So get a pencil and paper, if you would, please. I wonder if it's fair to say that leading this lifestyle, as Eric led it, would lead automatically, or maybe even... It would be preceded by a very large turn among anybody to, religious, embracing some very deep religious belief, some very personal, very strong belief that all of this is the way human beings should be living, and that what we're doing in society right now, particularly American society, is so out of balance. Is that so, Eric?
Well, I do think there is a natural compatibility between religion and living less technologically, because in both cases you're pursuing a goal that's intangible. And so there's a natural affinity. A person conceivably could go without a lot of technology for other reasons, you know, for humanitarian reasons or for ecological reasons.
Mm.
So it doesn't have to be, but there is a natural compatibility between the two things.
All right. A lot of people want to speak to you, and I'm about to get that, but you did write this book. I suppose Is that what you are now going to become, Eric, that you're back in the world? Are you going to become an author? Are you going to continue down this road? Or
I'm definitely going to continue the way I am. And writing is just one of several irons I have in the fire. I have the soap making, the rickshaw.
Yes, I meant to ask you about that. You operate a rickshaw? You're a rickshaw driver?
Well, properly called a pedicab.
Yes.
Taxi that's pedal-powered.
Yes.
And I have a prototype. It's the only one of its kind in the world. There's, besides the driver, there's room for four passengers, one of whom can pedal.
Yes.
And it's a very snazzy design.
Passenger has to pedal, or they're simply, can pedal?
One of the passengers may pedal if he or she chooses.
Yeah, okay.
Sitting beside the driver. And sometimes I take my son out, who's 11, and put him in that seat and give him 50 cents a ride. He's my assistant when I do that.
Do you take calls like a taxi company?
I
need a rickshaw over here at so-and-so.
That's why I did get a cell phone, because otherwise people couldn't get a hold of me.
A cell phone.
It's I don't really like having it, but I'm trying it out with the cell phone. But most of the time, people really just hail me on the street.
And how's the rickshaw business in St. Louis?
Actually, surprisingly good. Downtown St. Louis has a lot of restaurants and hotels, and there's a lot of conventions, and there's two major sports stadiums for the Rams and the Cardinals.
Oh, indeed.
So there's a lot of activity going on down there, and the distances are far enough that people don't necessarily want to walk, or they don't want to necessarily take a regular cab.
Well, how does a rickshaw navigate on the street without getting into trouble?
I was just in New York on my book tour.
Yes?
And I saw them all over the place in Manhattan.
Well, what about St. Louis, though?
Well, if you can do it in Manhattan, you can do it in St. Louis, because the traffic is, 20 times more heavy in Manhattan than St. Louis. There's really, downtown St. Louis is not that heavily trafficked. It's not that busy of a downtown center. A lot of the business has shifted over to Clayton, which is a near suburb.
All right, look, I don't want to let this pass. If you'd like a copy of the book, it's $24.95. If you're poor, he'll actually send it to you for that price. If you can afford it, and I assume most of you can, it's $27.95. That's $3 for shipping and handling. You'd write a check to Eric Brendy. He's my guest right now, E-R-I-C. You're going to send this to his home. last name Brendy, B-R-E-N-D-E.
And I'll autograph it.
And he'll autograph it for you. And you'd send it to 2037 Allen Avenue. That's 237 Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Avenue.
2037.
2037, I'm sorry. 2037 Allen Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri. That's M-O for Missouri. 63104, is that correct?
Right.
Zip code 63104, and he'll send you an autographed copy. And I guess the book, Eric, is a kind of like a tour through your entire experience. Is that it?
Starts out with some of my childhood, then moves on to MIT, and that's a launch pad for the experiment.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Eric Brendy. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Quite well, thank you.
Good. Well, I'm. this is Ann from Walnut Creek, California. Hi.
Hi, Ann.
And I wanted to say that, first of all, I'm an ex-computer programmer, and I started programming in 1963 and retired from the Harvard Computing Center in 67. And I hate the direction that computers took. I still don't have a computer. I'm going to break down and get one. But I do think that the direction computers took has really dumbed down our society.
In what sense? Explain.
Well, in business, what's happened is that employees are trained to use the computer screen, and they're trained to use it exclusively, to not go outside the box of that computer monitor frame.
Yes.
And so they're not trained to know what their company does. So whereas it used to be that one could talk to somebody in an organization, and this includes like our legislators' offices, for instance, and get information, but now they don't know anything and they've lost their natural curiosity. They've accepted the situation. They've become passive and apathetic. And that, you know, and then with TV, of course, now I haven't watched TV in 4 years.
So, in other words, you're charging that with email and computer contact, there's no more human contact, even though it might be by phone or in person or whatever. It's
well, actually, I wasn't thinking of email and contact by computer. When I finally reached the point where I can no longer be effective in doing research other than by computer, because everything's on websites now, be it whether or not it's good information, it's the only information.
Well, you're making a case for it, though, not against it.
No, I'm saying that it's a fait accompli, and so I've got to join the fray, but I'm going to be very reluctant. And I think that it's done a number on our brains, and it's also lowered the level of general knowledge in this country.
Gosh, I don't know if that's true.
Oh.
The World Wide Web, I agree that a lot of it's trash, but, you know, it's like anything else, depending on how you use it, it can also be a treasure trove.
Well, I hope that'll be true, because I'm going to get a computer soon, but I think the average person, you know, has, because they're not learning things from other sources, including the classroom, the average, and well, there's not as much conversation going on at home,
well,
but
right.
That's for a lot of reasons.
All right. Well, my guess is Eric agrees with you on all the negatives about the computer, but you see, Eric, there's somebody, she's going to go ahead and take the plunge anyway, fait accompli, she said, and she's got to go ahead and do it. Would you try and talk her out of it?
Well, I'd encourage her to read the short novella by E.M. Forster, The Machine Stops. It's a wonderful, wonderful piece. And it, even though it was written way back in, I think, the 1920s, it accurately forecasts our modern work and home environment in which people sit in front of this video monitor all day long and never leave. And all of their limbs have atrophied to the point where they can almost no longer walk or go anywhere. Of course, that's not quite how it's turned out. But I do think that there is something very insidious.
Do you think, like, you remember the words from the year 2525, our arms and legs hanging uselessly by our side? You remember that? Is that where it's going?
Well, I do think that we are suffering a lot of physical symptoms of the lack of use of our bodies, and even though our arms might not be shriveling, our hearts are suffering from plaque buildup because of the lack of exercise.
Uh-huh. First time caller line, you're on the air with Eric Brendy. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay, sir.
Yeah, let's see. Actually, I had more of like of a comment.
What kind of comment?
Kind of a general comment, just about tying in, you know, the minimalists, the minimites with the things that are happening globally, as far as the whole planet, you know, kind of dying here, supposedly.
Well, you know, in a way, it's a very good question. The planet, we can argue, I think, reasonably, is in ecological trouble, Eric. And I wonder if the Minimites are even aware of this or anything else outside of their they really lock themselves away from any world news, right? It doesn't come by TV, it doesn't come by radio, I don't even know if they read newspapers.
Well, and it's not even part of their real purpose.
Yeah.
They don't see this as environmentally responsible. They just see it as a good way to live.
Uh-huh.
And then one of the benefits of it is that it is environmentally responsible. And that's one reason why I wrote this book, as a pitch to the individual to lead a better life, not as some way to improve the environment. Because I think
yes, but again, are the Mennonites aware of the state of our environment?
Well, I think that they are aware, and some are more aware than others. You have degrees of that, and there are some who would take it very seriously, but they're not members of the Sierra Club.
Right, they're members of their own club. No, I've got that. I was just wondering if they, you know, how do they get an awareness of the world, if you don't mind? In other words, some news in some way of what's going on in the world must reach them, or does it not?
Well, if it's important, they'll find out about it. If it's, in a way, they're luckier than we are with regard to filtering of hype. They don't get all the made-up news that's only transitory. But if, say the World Trade Center collapses or something,
they find out
momentous. Well, their customers will tell them, and they'll immediately tell each other. So they have, we serve as their filtering device.
I see. And so unless it's really happening or has really happened, the news wouldn't make it to them. So that would be a filter for all the baloney, I suppose. You're right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Eric Brendy. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Bill from California.
Yes, Bill.
I'm struck by two things by your guest this evening. One is, it's kind of a throwback to the ancient Greeks, where you had wanting a blend of the physical and the mental to have a perfect kind of a person or a human. And also, I'm struck by the fact that if Professor Kaku and others are correct, that as we connect more as a planet, as a world of peoples through communication, that to survive in such large numbers as we are as on the planet today, it simply cannot be that we go back to living in this kind of situation. That it's simply, as the other earlier caller said, the lady talking about computers, that's a bell that cannot be unrung. Information simply is too vast.
Well, all right. That's a pretty good point, Eric, that there are a lot of bells out there. The Internet's one of them. That cannot be unrung, and there will be many instances where it is a fait accompli, and you simply have to give in and become part of it. I
think there's always room for us to do less than the powers that be would have us do. I think even if somebody has a job that they're locked into for one reason or another, I think that they can find ways to minimize the technology in their daily life without necessarily quitting their job. I think there's always room for that, and I think to the extent that we make intelligent choices like that, our economy will change, and in turn, the kinds of jobs we have will change. It's reciprocal. So I think we're the participants, and if we change our lifestyles, then everything else will change accordingly, eventually.
What would happen to a Mennonite who snuck out and went to a computer cafe and was seen by a neighbor going into a computer cafe?
Well, I don't even know if they have a rule against going into a computer cafe because it never happens.
Well.
But if there were a rule against that and they had vigilant people watching around to make sure people weren't doing it, then they would get reported and then get in trouble.
Do they have vigilant people watching?
Not that kind of thing. But let's say if somebody does violate a rule in their community, then assuming that the person was a member who joined the community and made the vow to observe all of the rules in the community, then that person would be, you know, asked to repent of that. It's a religious thing for them, so it would be something they'd repent of, because it was something that implicitly they probably...
That would be a sin. Put another way, that would be a sin.
For them, in who are the core members of the group. And that's I mentioned that in my book, that perhaps I wouldn't put put it that way. That's one of the reasons why we wouldn't have ever joined the group formally, because we don't put it in terms of sin to use or not use a certain kind of technology. And that's where we might have differed with them. Luckily, our landlord who rented us the house that we were in was an affiliate of the community, but he was not a member, and for that very reason, he was a little bit reluctant to tie those two things together.
Well, you know, we're about done here. We're running out of time, but I must say, this has been incredible and amazing. I detected the same thing, you know, that the audience did through the interview, and that is that you're absolutely sincere, both in what you believe now and what you did then, and so that's going to make it a really interesting book for a lot of people, and you just wouldn't believe, I don't believe, how many people are fast-blasting me on a computer, mind you, that, oh, you know, I've been thinking about that, and that kind of lifestyle actually appeals to me, and I'd like to know more, and therefore, I think your book probably will sell.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't take much. Well, anyway, I'm glad you're happy, and I think you got your ideas across just fine. Eric, thank you for being here tonight. Good luck with your book, and I don't know, keep it minimized there, buddy.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Take care. All right, Eric Brendy, The Minimites. I'm going to remember this one for a long time, and I'm not sure why. There was just something sincere and real about it all, and so far beyond my understanding that I still can't even begin to contemplate it. But that's what it's all about here, learning about new things. See you tomorrow night. Ciao.